This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we're checking in with Shasta County to learn more about how coronavirus cases there have doubled in the past 3 weeks. And we'll take a closer look at COVID-19 numbers in California and the possible long-term effects of the virus with Dr. Miriam Nuño, Associate Professor of Biostatistics at UC Davis. If you have questions for us, let us know on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Wednesday, June 24th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. The coronavirus continues spreading with rapidity across the 11-county North State region, where, according to local public health officials, the pandemic has spread to 574 individuals. At least 15 North State residents are currently hospitalized with COVID-19. Fatalities across the region stand at 10. According to data available Wednesday afternoon, Butte County was reporting 127 cases, Sutter County 125 cases, Shasta County 88, Glenn County 74, Tehama 59, Yuba 43, Siskiyou 26, Colusa 14, Lassen 9, Plumas 7, and Trinity County 2. Shattering a record set just Tuesday, officials confirmed a staggering 7,149 new cases of coronavirus in California Wednesday, close to 50% higher than Tuesday's figure. Until this week, the daily number of new cases was typically under 3,000. The total number of cases in the Golden State is 190,222, up 21% from a week ago. Meanwhile, the California Department of Public Health reported fewer deaths, 65, from the virus Wednesday, continuing a trend of daily fatalities remaining under 100. According to department statistics, 372 Californians have died in the past week due to COVID-19. In a press conference Wednesday, Governor Gavin Newsom acknowledged that cases are rising and some data points are creating concerns. Additional cases were expected as restrictions were eased, and officials are closely monitoring that rise.
The number that is incredibly important is the number we've tried to socialize with you, and increasingly people all across the country are doing the same in their respective states, and that is the positivity rate. That's the total number of tests versus the total number of people that have tested positive. And we put those in percentage terms.
During the first 2 weeks of the pandemic, when tests were hard to come by and only those meeting strict criteria could be tested, 40.8% of tests were positive, Newsom said. As testing became more available, that rate plummeted. But in recent weeks, Newsom said, it's been creeping back up, a growing concern. Other potential red flags include hospitalizations and the number of patients needing intensive care, both of which are rising. Newsom said currently 8% of hospital beds and 30% of intensive care unit beds are occupied. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Over the last 3 weeks, the number of people falling ill with the coronavirus in Shasta County has more than doubled. After recording 34 cases over the last 2 weeks, at the time of this recording on Wednesday, the figure now stands at 88 cases. For more on how the virus is spreading, NSPR's Mark Albert spoke with Carrie Schutte, spokeswoman for the Shasta County Health and Human Services Agency. Mark started the conversation by considering the rise in cases and asking how concerned people should be.
We knew that once things started reopening here in Shasta County, that the numbers would tick up. You know, we've had quite a number of cases in the past week or so. Many of those were connected with a family gathering. And so one of the messages that we're really trying to get out to folks is that I think everybody knows that mass gatherings are prohibited, something that everybody really seems to understand very clearly. These smaller types of gatherings with people from different households are also problematic, as was the case with this last recent batch of cases.
I think people get it. There's no way I'm going to go to a concert, but, you know, my neighbor down the street has a pool and invited me for a barbecue and they have some family over. Why not, you know, hang out? How dangerous could that be?
Exactly. I think many of us have had that experience, and we've been in California in a situation where people have been asked to stay home for a lot of months. Now the weather's really nice. People are starting to get complacent about the situation. You know, how problematic could it be to just go to a barbecue at your next door neighbor's house? Well, we're finding that unfortunately, if one of the people there is infected with COVID-19, and particularly if they're symptomatic, in this situation, people did have symptoms when they went to this family gathering and ended up with many, many more cases as a result, unfortunately. And of course, that person in no way intended to make anybody sick. They were just having a small gathering, and that's what ended up happening. Unfortunately, that's how this disease is.
The 47 people who've contracted COVID-19 in Shasta County since the first, what do we know about how they caught it?
There are a variety of ways in which the patients have contracted the virus over the past couple of weeks. As I mentioned, there was a family gathering that resulted in quite a number of cases. There have been people who have visited family members from outside of the area. They've come to Shasta County and went home to discover that they had symptoms, and the people here in Shasta County that they visited also ended up having symptoms. We've got people that have traveled to other places and come back and tested positive. Most of our cases recently have been people with symptoms, but we've had a few who have had pre-op tests. Before you have surgery, it's now required in most cases to have a COVID test, and a few have been discovered that way. Some people have no idea where they got the virus. It's really a mixed bag, which is why it's important for everyone to follow the state order that now requires masks in public spaces, to practice social distancing at all times, and definitely to stay home when you are sick.
I heard that Shasta County has moved into a high-risk category for something related to the pandemic. Can you elaborate on that?
I can. At our website at shastaready.org, there's a link called Data and Statistics. We recently uploaded an alert level system that measures the disease in three separate ways. We measure the disease status, which is how much COVID-19 is occurring in our community, the healthcare system, which measures the trends in hospitalized COVID-19 patients. That would include things like number of available ICU beds, number of people who have needed to be hospitalized, and then disease control, which measures the effectiveness of the community efforts to control the spread of COVID-19. Right now, we are at an overall alert level 3 out of 4 because of the disease status. And the indicator that's putting us into that level 3 is the number of positive cases in the past 14 days. We're at a level 2 with disease control, and that is because of the positivity rate. The positivity rate, if it's over 2%, then that puts us into a level 2 low alert. So we moved up into a level 2 recently.
So we could get to a point, if a number of other things happen, that we'll have to reimpose some of the restrictions that are just being lifted.
Right now, what our alert level 3 is indicating is that people should limit their everyday activities to increase safety. While back when we were all green, we were encouraging people to just take those everyday precautions. That's what the alert level 1 indicator says. Alert level 2 is to increase efforts to limit personal exposure. And now we're up at alert level 3, which is to limit everyday activities to increase safety. So we're actually asking people to, you know, really take that extra precaution. You know, we're not closing businesses, of course, nothing of that nature. We're just really encouraging people to pay close attention to their surroundings, what's going on around us right now. And right now, we've got quite a number of cases that are...
People seem to have virus fatigue. They're tired of all the precautions. And with more and more things getting back to normal, it seems as though more people are greeting masks and distancing with a shrug. With 86 cases in Shasta, 23 in Siskiyou, 53 in Tehama, and now 66 in Glenn, the precautions are likely more important than ever. As a public health professional, that must be frustrating. Do you have any words for those whose resolve might be faltering?
There is probably not a person on this planet who is not tired of the news every day being filled with talk about COVID. And, you know, now that there's the mask guidance here in California and, you know, lots of things, people are tired of it. And we get that. We live here too. We're also tired of it. Unfortunately, the virus is still here. We still don't have a vaccine. There's still no cure for it. So when the governor lifted the lockdown, something has to replace that lockdown to continue to protect our community. In exchange for giving up that lockdown and having us be able to move about the county much more freely than we were able to 2 months ago, the trade-off is we need to wear masks in public to prevent the spread of the virus and to maintain that social distancing. We can't just get rid of the lockdown and call it good because things are not back to normal. The virus is still here. So we exchanged that lockdown for this mask guidance, which is a very easy way for all of us to protect ourselves, to protect each other, to protect our vulnerable communities, and really to protect our local businesses. When they were closed down, we were very adamant that we wanted them to be back. We wanted to be able to go to restaurants. We wanted to be able to do all these things. And now we can, but we have to do our part now to help keep them open and safe.
That was Carrie Schutte, spokeswoman for the Shasta County Health and Human Services Agency, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. You're listening to Special Coverage from North State Public Radio. When we're back, Mark speaks with Associate Professor of Biostatistics at UC Davis, Dr. Miriam Nuno, about why there is such a large discrepancy in the number of cases of coronavirus in California versus the number of deaths. Stay tuned.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Carbonite for protecting files from data loss and other online threats when working from home or in the office. If something happens to the original, there's an extra copy in the cloud. More at Carbonite.com. From Raymond James, a firm focused on transforming lives, businesses, and communities through tailored wealth management, banking, and capital market solutions. Learn more at RaymondJames.com. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org. Support for NPR comes from this station and from Empower Retirement, dedicated to helping more than 9.6 million people save and invest for a better future. Empower offers guidance for people to take action so they can focus on today while saving for tomorrow. From Procter & Gamble, maker of Metamucil, a fiber supplement containing psyllium, a plant-based fiber for trapping and removing waste in the digestive system. Designed to be taken every day. More at Metamucil.com. From C3, C3.ai software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at C3.ai. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
This is Special Coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. As a new and deadly disease, the coronavirus has physicians and scientists fighting it and at the same time trying to learn all they can about it to better our odds. Still, there is much we do not know about its behavior or lethality. For a closer look at the statistics and what we're learning about COVID-19's long-term impacts, NSPR's Mark Albert reached out to Dr. Miriam Nuno, an associate professor of biostatistics with a joint appointment in the Department of Surgery at UC Davis. Mark started their conversation asking why there's a seemingly wide variation in the daily death toll from the coronavirus in California, while the number of new infections is much more stable.
With deaths, the way deaths are captured, there's typically a 1 to 2 week delay from documentation to when the data is reported. Typically, you know, deaths are counted earlier and continuously revised over time, you know, for a couple of weeks. And so there's, you know, quite a bit of variability in some of the way the data is captured.
So it's just a statistical anomaly that the numbers aren't catching up, let's say, on Saturday and Sunday from the weekend, and that would explain much of the difference?
Yes, and I think, you know, I've been following pretty closely the debt reporting in Mexico, because I'm originally from there, and you know, that has been the topic, you know, the president and different, you know, individuals in public health have been dealing with, because they have even a longer lag than we have in the U.S., which is, you know, at most usually 2 weeks. In Mexico, it's about a month. And so people are really hesitant of, you know, what is the truth? I think we're doing a little bit better here in the U.S., but nevertheless, you know, it is a revolving, you know, problem.
Just the difference between the number of new cases ranging from 2,000 to 3,000, that's about a 50% increase, whereas in terms of deaths, where they're fluctuating from 20 to over 100.
Yeah, and there's also, you know, something that the CDC is doing where they're capturing multiple things, or they're capturing pneumonia-like illness deaths, influenza-like illness deaths, and then COVID-like illness deaths. And so it's sort of a system that is capturing that's all related to COVID. And, you know, there's a lot of investigation that goes on with looking at these cases. Was it really COVID? Was it pneumonia? Was it influenza? And so, you know, it does take a while to, you know, quality check some of these data.
There remains much that we don't know about this disease, but we've been hearing anecdotally that many people who are considered recovered in the statistics are actually far from well. Are there any patterns developing in terms of what people are experiencing generally as their bodies fight off the illness?
Most of the data that we have about the long-term impact from COVID-19 is coming from China, because they've seen this before. So in general, most people recover completely with, you know, some residual coughs or shortness of breath. But there is, you know, a certain group of the population that has been reported to experience quite poor long-term outcomes, specifically, you know, individuals that experience and develop this acute respiratory distress syndrome, the ARDS, where, you know, it's a condition that, you know, describes an excessive lung damage. A couple of studies that come out of, you know, Wuhan, China, have shown that individuals that develop RDS tend to also experience what they call pulmonary fibrosis. Pretty much is holes in their, you know, lungs. And these complications from, you know, COVID-19 tends to, you know, have long-term effects. The severity of the symptoms vary across individuals, but some of the symptoms, you know, involve shortness of breath, dry cough, fatigue, you know, aching muscles. And, you know, in the older population, the symptoms are even more dramatic. Some other long-term consequences, a lot of the individuals that undergo, you know, extensive ICU care, there seems to be, you know, high level of reporting for mental health issues like PTSD, anxiety, depression, and, you know, clearly diminished physical abilities and cognitive impairment. There was one study, you know, that also looked at brain function as a result of prolonged ICU stay, and 30% of patients had neurological complications. For the U.S., you know, individuals that, you know, we're seeing, we're just at the point of starting to look at that. But, you know, how do we know how that the impact that this will have in the U.S. population is still out in the air, but we would expect that we're going to see high levels of impact. I do a lot of work on COVID-19 specifically for elderly individuals that live in long-term care facilities. And the long-term impact is going to be particularly very impactful in individuals that live in these nursing homes. A lot of the individuals that live in these nursing homes tend to have higher rates of chronic lung disease, heart disease, kidney, and so many comorbidities that, you know, even though they survive their experience, they have a path ahead of themselves. Being in these nursing homes just really puts them at a higher risk for long-term complications. So I think 65 plus individuals in nursing long-term care facilities are particularly vulnerable for the long-term impact of COVID-19. And I hope that, you know, ourselves and some of our colleagues will be looking at that.
What role, if any, is the weather playing? New cases are rising pretty rapidly in Florida and Arizona in hot and humid and also hot and dry climates. Meanwhile, New Zealand seems to have defeated that. They're in the middle of their winter. I don't know what's going on in Africa or, you know, Chile and Argentina. At the same time, here in the U.S., we generally associate cool weather with flu season and these types of respiratory illnesses. Is there any indication that this will get much worse in our winter?
You know, so I think there are some studies that have been pretty solid about the viability of the virus in cold conditions. But I think everyone that we've been chatting with, you know, I think the winter is going to be probably the harder time to deal with this, because primarily we know we'll definitely will have, you know, a lot of activity of flu-like illness. And there's a lot of, you know, seasonal variability that we see. But, you know, one of the things that we typically think of the winter is there's a lot of indoors contact, right? So one of the things of the summer is, I know, although people are, you know, connecting more, that at least we're in the open spaces. But, you know, when it gets cold, you know, people tend to be more indoors. And so I would say, you know, what I have been doing myself is, you know, trying to do as much as I can in getting my outdoor activity out, because I do feel that we have to sort of prepare for probably that winter where most of us by that time will be tired of being isolated. We will be tired of, you know, doing all these control measures. So you put all the pieces together, you know, people just, you know, giving out on, you know, distancing, face mask, and then being indoors, and then the flu season. And so I think there will be not weather alone, but multiple factors that are just going to probably make things a bit worse. I do think temperature is one of them, but it is a combination of factors that just all will, you know, convene to make this a worse situation, I believe.
But is there any pattern developing in terms of the southern hemisphere, which just went through its first day of winter?
So in terms of seasonality in the south, I actually don't think that we have seen anything specific. I know that people are closely monitoring that. But, you know, it has been sort of a crapshoot. You know, some places have lower than you expect, some are higher. So there's really no consistent picture yet.
I mean, people say, you know, New York City got hit very, very hard. And yet Singapore or Hong Kong, which is much more dense, seems to have been able to weather it quite well.
When I think about the future and I look around myself, I was actually this past week, I visited my family in Riverside under a very contained environment. And I was shocked to see that in grocery stores, you have people walking around with no mask. I was shocked to see that there was a set of four firemen that came in the grocery store with no, you know, no face masks. I was shocked. You know, I live in Davis, and I know in Davis, we have a very different picture. But when we think about the future, I think this is where people are, that I do a lot of modeling, and a lot of the modeling is based on people's behaviors, which is really, you know, impossible to predict. And so I was watching my phone over the week, you know, weekend when I was up there, and, you know, there's these continuous reports, cases in Riverside increased by 20-30% within a couple of days. And then you go to the store and everyone is walking around with no mask. So I do think that there's just so many pieces to it that in the U.S. we're just kind of failing to keep up with high standards. One example that I can think of, Taiwan, is the one country that I believe has done things amazingly well from the very beginning. Fortunately or unfortunately, they had a very bad SARS pandemic in 2003. So they had the opportunity to learn how to do things better. But, you know, this time around with, you know, COVID-19, a population of, you know, 23 million individuals, they had 446 cases, 7 deaths. And from day one, they say, we're going to do masks. They had a lot of plastic barriers. They had sentences and, you know, fines for individuals that were wearing, you know, PPEs and masks. And they really have done super well in controlling them. It's been for a couple months where they have restaurants open. They're having a normal life. But, you know, they have continued to really follow each of the measures for prevention. And I feel like we could do half of what they're doing. It's kind of amazing how they are just having a normal life with very, very small impact. But I think everyone's in a sort of, you know, very high levels of solidarity and just doing everything that they need to be doing to prevent the infections. And then you have the case of, you know, Canada, which is very similar to Taiwan in terms of population size. And Canada is like the U.S., you know, everything has gone wrong. And, you know, it's like similar population, completely sort of devastated, socially ready to give up and, you know, anxious and the way the U.S. is. And so it's very interesting. And I think, you know, I was telling my husband that we went to visit the family and then I find out that, you know, people are having all these parties and they're coming to us and I'm like, what is going on? And so I was like, we have to protect ourselves. You know, we can't assume that no one's going to protect us. And so I think everyone needs to assume that, you know, people have the infection and you just need to do what you have to do to protect yourself and your family. And it is shocking to me how a lot of different cultures, like my Latin culture, I mean, people are having parties and baptisms and weddings. And I just cannot understand that, you know, there's a lot of information that people think is just a hoax and they still don't believe it. They're like, you know, I don't know anybody that has it. I don't know anybody that has died from it. And so it's hard to, how do you manage that? I was shocked. It's been interesting.
People seem to already have virus fatigue. They're tired of the precautions. And with more and more things getting back to normal, it seems as though more people are greeting masks and distancing with a shrug. And if you hear that they're talking about reopening movie theaters, you'd say, well, yeah, I guess it's okay if I go to the pub, when 2 weeks ago the pubs weren't open and people were saying they were going to avoid them. Do you have any words for those whose resolve might be faltering?
I think it's lack of belief, which is hard to... I mean, I'm struggling myself to be able to, you know, answer these because, like I mentioned, I went to Riverside this past weekend and I hear yesterday from my sister that my mom was in a casino. And I'm like, so enclosed places are just very difficult. You know, movie theaters, bars, casinos, I mean, those are the places where you don't want to be. If we can move some of the restaurants to, you know, have food outdoors, I think that that's fine. There's just so much variability in how people behave. And unfortunately, I think, as you mentioned, people are fatigued and they're just, you know, it's impossible to understand. And I think part of this is that there's such mixed messaging from the very top, starting with our president, that there is just no consistent message and people are just fed up. And I think all of that has an impact on how effective, you know, we could be. Yeah, I have no idea how to, you know, other than putting evidence out there. Yeah, I don't know.
That was Dr. Miriam Nuño, Associate Professor of Biostatistics with a joint appointment in the Department of Surgery at UC Davis, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. And that is your program. As always, if you have thoughts for us, leave them on our message line, 433-9216, or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Haracha, Eric Radaville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned to North State Public Radio.